First Person Arts is doing their ever popular Valentine's Day night story slam, The X-Files, on Valentine's Day, February 14th. You can see a good friend of the show, Martha Cooney, at 7:30 at the World Cafe Live. And the show has been so popular, they're actually doing a second show that night. So the 9:30 show is going to be hosted by the effervescent Eric Thomas. So you should go see either or both of those. Go to the First Person Arts website, firstpersonarts.org, to buy tickets. You probably really should buy tickets in advance for that one. The storytelling podcast out of South Philadelphia. Look, folks, I'm calling it. It's the age of TMI. That is too much information. I think that is the moment we're in now. As TJ talked about a few episodes ago, it had been the age of irony, and now it's no longer cool to be ironic. And I think TJ's right about that. And no one has said what it is now. And I think the time we're in now is the time of telling it all and telling more than people are comfortable with. I think, to put it in a sort of Christian historical perspective, I think Mark Maron was the John the Baptist of the age of TMI, but Louis C.K. was its prophet. And the moment that I came to this is I was listening to Aaron McGathy's podcast, This Feels Terrible. And she tells a story, it's a recording of a story she told live at some show in Canada, where she talks about one of her first boyfriends and how the last time they ever had sex, they were having sex on his roommate's brand new super white comforter while she was in the middle of her period, but he didn't tell her boyfriend, and it ended terribly. And I thought to myself, the world needs this kind of story. This is the moment that we need to be in. And so I strongly embrace the age of TMI, and I'm a follower of the Church of TMI, and I'm glad it's here. So, welcome to The World Exists. The folks you're around the table with today are me, Brady Dale. We have R. Eric Thomas, Jamie Fountain, and Hillary Ray.
The World Exists podcast is a storytelling show where tales get told like they would at a bar, or at brunch, or at a funeral, with folks hopping in or making jokes and adding their own little side stories. You can see so much more about this podcast at theworldexists.com, including photos and videos.
And leading us today is Brady Dale. Brady Dale is from Kansas and producer of The World Exists. He's a recovering professional organizer and novelist. His two novella set, Dream Her Back, is available on Amazon now. In 2013, he will release his novel, Depth and Faith, as a free audiobook. For more information, you can find that at bradydale.com, D-A-L-E, and on Twitter at bradydale. Take it away, Brady.
Cool. Thanks, Eric. So I didn't have my first drink until I turned 21 years old. And I know that's really weird, and don't think this is because I'm a kid from Kansas and we're all like backwards there. Actually, drinking is a really big part of growing up in Kansas. And I can't tell you how often I heard the word kegger as every weekend approached, but I never went. I think the reason I didn't drink was because when I was about 11 or 12 years old, I had pretty close encounters with like real deal, legit scary alcoholism. And I also knew that my real father, who I had never met, was also an alcoholic, and that is what had broken up my mother's marriage to him. And so I was really worried. I was really worried that it was genetic and that I was prone to alcoholism. So everything about alcohol scared me. And I also didn't grow up in a family that had the like, I didn't have the like grandpa who had a drink of scotch every day at 3 and got like a little bit more jovial, you know, like I didn't have that. I didn't have the like funny uncle who always had some beers at, you know, holiday dinners and was, everyone thought he was great. Like there was, I had no, because my, not my stepmother's family, but my mother's family, which was my main real family, there was just no drinking at all. Like, I was 23 years old when it finally occurred to me that, like, this was really weird that other families, like, get drunk together at Thanksgiving. Like, people would say, like, I can't wait to get home and get drunk with my grandpa. I'd be like, what? I didn't do anything like that. So I had no positive associations with alcohol. I only had, like, very scary negative associations with it. So I didn't drink at all. Not only did I not drink, and this probably won't come as any huge surprise, but I was a self-righteous little fuck about it.
What?
You? No. Oh,
wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is uncharacteristic, Brady. Yeah.
No one believes that.
Did it involve smashing bottles?
What do you mean?
Like, anytime you saw Carrie someone Nation? Drinking, like, you would grab it out of their hand and smash bottles.
No, because we would never. A few episodes ago, we talked about the Weirdo Dudes. The crew who was the Weirdo Dudes kind of morphed into my friends all through high school. That same group stayed my posse, and I just didn't really let us go anywhere near where alcohol was being drank. I was just like, nope, we're not going to those parties. Like, it's not happening. Nope. And one of the things I'm actually really...
Were you actually even invited to those parties?
There were not tons of them. There were parties I could have gone to. But I was like, nope, we're not drinking. It's not what we're doing. And one of the things I'm really bitter about, actually, looking back on it, is, like, I was already, you know, a nascent young liberal. My big liberal standout in high school was that I was, like, there were some gay kids in our school, and I was okay with them and would stand up for them. And the local Southern Baptist church in town, like, would actually actively tell people at youth gatherings not to hang out with me because I was a bad influence. And what really pisses me off about that is some of those kids were in my posse in high school. And once I left town to go to college, they all became total fucking alcoholics and drug addicts and, like, went batshit crazy. Like, once I was out of town, it wasn't the fucking church that was keeping them out of that shit. It was Brady Dale. So
you could start, like, an organization then, I guess, for this
ministry.
Yeah.
If you will.
So you're both an acolyte of the Church of TMI, and you're also the founder of the Church of Brady Dale's Teetotalers and Keeping Out of Trouble with the Good Kids.
Well, I mean, I was in that church then, and I'm not really in it now. But I'm just saying that, like, you know, when I was younger, I seriously didn't drink, and I was total dick about it. Here's how much of a dick I was about it. And it extended on into college. There was a girl who I was really into, and we were in French class together, and we were doing a project together. And so she came over, and we were, like, making food or something, and we were, like, having dinner together at my house.
Fringe class?
French.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, so it's not like a class about Joshua Jackson? I feel like I'm talking about Joshua Jackson a lot today, but I don't have any regrets.
I was just thinking it was a class about things that were on the cusp. Like, just anything. Like the food that
computers
you have to
might
make.
Do this someday.
In a way, it was
gluten free before gluten free was popular.
But I meant to say French.
Okay.
I was on the cusp of maybe getting to somewhere with this girl, but one of the things I did, which prevented that from happening, was she wanted to put just, like, a tiny little bit of cognac into a sauce that we were making. And I was like, oh no, we can't do that. Even though, like, we were going to cook it, you know, yeah. Like, it would have all, I don't know, what the fuck, folks. Like, that's how much of a dick I was.
Yeah, a few tablespoons of cognac does not an alcoholic make.
No.
Especially in a reduced sauce.
It's just, yeah.
Well, you know, but I mean, like, at that age, I think a lot of people are really black and white about things, you know, and so, like, it's sort of like you can't equivocate, you know,
yeah.
You're either, like, for it or against it. So that makes sense.
So I go away. So I went to school in upstate New York to Cornell, and we had a program in Washington, Cornell in Washington. So I was down in Washington a semester before I would turn 21. And I'm one of those people who my birthday occurs very late in the school year. So I'm, like, a May birthday. So, like, all of my friends were driving for months and months before me in the same year in high school, and a bunch of people turned 21 to drink. So as my 21st birthday approached, it just because of what it is and what it means in everyone's life, I started thinking about this whole drinking thing more and more. And I was like, maybe I'm going too far on this. Maybe I'm too big of a dick about it. Maybe I need to, like, open my mind and I'll try booze and I'll see, you know, I'll see what it's like. And so I made plans to be back in Ithaca for my 21st birthday. And I was going to hang out with my best friends in high school and college who were the Ultimate Frisbee Team. Those were my buddies. And
I like that you returned to saying Ultimate Frisbee, because when you said ultimate, at one time to everyone at this table. No one understood what that was.
Yeah. So I was hanging out with the Ultimate Team, and we went to the Nice Bar in College Town in Ithaca, which was this place. I don't know if it's still there. It probably is. It was a place called Stella's. And whereas most people's 21st birthday is like this drunken rager, for my 21st birthday, my friends Loki and Tigger, that's their ultimate nicknames.
Loki and Tigger?
Tigger?
So wait a minute, as in Winnie the Pooh's sidekick, and then also
and then a Norse
Thor's
god of
sidekick.
Mischief.
Yeah,
fascinating.
Oh my god, I can actually see their cargo shorts from here. They disgust.
Wait, Loki is the Norse god of mischief.
Yeah, Loki was a legit badass. Like he definitely was.
No, if you watch the Avengers, you know that.
I don't think you can be a badass and play ultimate frisbee.
The actual origin of his nickname, and this is gonna make him sound dorkier. Loki was
everything like, about this sounds dorky.
He's a
and
really cool
I'm
guy.
I'm telling
but,
you this. I'm just saying something.
And I'm the first to say a lot of my friends are nerds. Loki is a legit cool guy, but Loki transferred from SUNY Buffalo to Cornell when he switched from being an engineer to being a scientist. And he came to Cornell, his nickname was Thor because he threw the hammer.
Oh my god.
And the hammer is an over the head kind of upside down way of throwing the disc.
You don't need to explain how ultimate frisbee is played.
No, that's pretty dorky.
I don't think any of us are gonna play it after this, so we don't need lessons.
But because he knew that was dorky, it shifted over to the god of mischief and he became Loki. And so whatever,
because that was way less dorky.
No, right. Whatever. Loki was cool. He was cool. So, and Loki was 2 years older than me. And like, because I never had a father and I never had really big brothers, like my whole life, I've been like looking for father/ big brother figures. And like Loki is, there's about four different guys who have been like big deal, big brothers to me over the years. And Loki is hands down like one of the top of those guys. And so naturally, when I was going to go drink for the first time, I go with Loki and Tig, and we went to this bar and I had one beer. And it's cool that I started so late because I got to like think about my first drink, and it was a traditional black and tan, which is a Guinness and I think Harp. Or I never remember if it's Harp or Bass, but and I choked it down. It was tough to get through. And that is the only beer I drank. And I was like, well begun. And and I went to there. So then my senior year, I came back to campus for my senior year. And I was embracing drinking and trying it out slowly. Actually, at one point, I was going to try to document every single drink I ever took, but that didn't happen.
That's not nerdy at all.
No. No. Was that Loki's idea?
Drinking journal?
I never really even started it.
Dear Diary, today I had 1.5 glasses of Chardonnay with an ice cube.
I did that for every outfit I wore in high school for all 4 years.
Do you still have those?
Yes.
Because bet they should be in a museum of crazy teenage behavior, which is a museum you should probably start.
I would go to that museum every day.
Which is why I wish that you actually had documented your drinks.
Yeah, I know.
Amazing. Oh my god.
I do. So
wait, I'm sorry, can I just ask one question before you go on? I'll see. So you were like, there was Loki and Tigger. What was your nickname?
Oh yeah, that's a great question, Eric.
I was not an ultimate frisbee player. So I was like,
you just hung out with them. Like you were cool enough to hang out with them.
Huh. I became,
or you were too cool.
Right. I became.
What's the level of coolness here?
I wasn't cool. I mean, that's for sure. I started playing ultimate later, but a part of the only reason I was able to hang out with these guys because they were really good, and their circle. I hung out with the very best Ultimate players, and it was a clear meritocracy. Like, you didn't get to hang out with Loki and Tigger unless you were really good. Mm-hmm. And the only way I could hang out with them was if I just didn't fucking touch a disc. Because if I tried to play, be like, and we're done. You're not hanging out with us anymore. Because I was never, even when I did play, I was never great. Mm-hmm. But they were, you know, that was after college. So
what was the thing that drew the three of you together then?
Oh, well, so what it just, I was a transfer. I transferred second semester of my freshman year. And like I said, Loki was, he transferred from SUNY Buffalo too. And while he was older, we happened up being roommates that second semester. And Loki is an insanely smart guy. And it to this day, it's meaningful to me that he was like, you know, he's like, I've only ever thought like three other people were smart in my life. And you're one of them. And so like, he and I became super good friends. And like I said, he was like my big brother and mentor. And he was for a certain amount of time, like we had been roommates for like 3 years altogether. And now he's a professor of genetics in Indiana. He's a no joke dude. Like he's cool. And so I was just his roommate and we hit it off pretty well and we stayed friends. So
were you the only non-ultimate friend?
Pretty much. Like, Loki's circle was pretty solidly all Ultimate players. Like, it was, I used to, their team was called the Buds, and I used to, they were so fratty, I would call them Beta Upsilon Delta, because it was so much like a fraternity. Because they only
Buds were, like, friends or, like, smoking weed?
It was a pot reference, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm scandalized.
Yeah. Though Loki didn't smoke, though, there was an annual smokers versus non-smokers game that, and the smokers would all get high and play the non-smokers, and the smokers won every year.
Everything about Ultimate Frisbee bums me out.
It is an awesome game, like what everyone says. Oh, I had a great time. My ultimate years were a lot of fun. So, whatever.
They were the ultimate.
They were the ultimate.
Is that going to be the title of one of your memoirs, The Ultimate Years? And so, then in like parentheses, Frisbee.
So that's all really just prelude. We need to get to the girl because this is a Brady story. So we're going to call the girl of this story Gertrude, not her real name.
Sadly.
That's a shame.
Gertrude, you know, I was a friend guy with girls. I was, you know, I would hang out with girls and I would be the guy who was like, I think we need to be just friends, Brady. Like, that was my story for a long time.
So wait, you were the nice guys of OkCupid Tumblr?
Oh, God. He wasn't that.
I don't know what that is, but I...
We'll get into that later. That's a whole nother kettle of fish.
I think I probably was.
No, those are actual, just really briefly, that's just a Tumblr that shows guys who say on their OkCupid profiles, I'm a nice guy, and then say things like, you know, like, why don't girls give it up more? Like, in the same profile.
Like, so, I get friend zoned.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's...
Well, I didn't say that. I think I was pretty bitter about, I got friend zoned a lot. A lot of friend zoned. And I think Gertrude is a great illustration of what was so complicated for me at the time, because I've talked about this before, how once upon, this is no longer true. I was once upon a time so non-threatening that I would get into like pretty sexual situations that like really sexual situations that like a girl would never get into with a guy who she was maybe kind of thinking about sleeping with, or who had any sense that like there was any danger there, you know, like I've given a lot of topless back rubs that didn't lead to sex at all.
How is it possible
to understand? I know, true, many.
We're all silently freaking out right now, just so that you can see what's going on here. We're all like Hillary's doubled over. We just don't even know what's going on.
With the exception of in a physician's office, my shirt does not come off like casually amongst friends.
Right.
You know, yeah. Like certainly not like.
Yeah. So me and this girl, Gertrude, who can only be described as haunting in terms of
she was a ghost.
When you say that her name is Gertrude, though, I imagine like a large, older German woman wielding like loaves of delicious breads, but wearing like a dirndl.
No, she was a girl who would cause a traffic jam on the Autobahn. That's what I mean by haunting. So really.
So she was a ghost.
She was a German ghost who died on the Autobahn. She's haunting the Autobahn right now.
So there was a period in college in which Gertrude and I, being very close, there was a lot of late night cuddling, you know, a lot of long talks.
Who are these girls?
Yeah, this story could be repeated with a number of made up names. It was a complicated late teenage life, trust me. So, you know, there was that whole question of like, were women like this who were in my life, were they actually attracted to me and I just wasn't making a move because I was a candy ass? Or was it because I was so non-threatening? And there was always a fuzzy line between those two things. Gertrude made it more complicated at one point when she said, just as if it was like a thing to do for a favor, she was like, I kind of want to be the girl you lose your virginity to. But she had a boyfriend at the time, and, you know, I was like, okay.
Like, what are you doing in 10 minutes?
Right.
I would like to brush my teeth first.
Actually, I don't. You know what? This is what a dork I was. I think I actually, in my mind, that's what I really thought. But I think the reality is I probably reacted with terror and didn't even say something like that. You know, like, so whatever. That is the relationship I had with her. And so there was just one time when we did cross the lines over into legitimate physicality, though. I never slept with her. But I think that I'm going to win the prize for this being the nerdiest hookup story of all time. It was pretty early in college, and we stayed up really late at night reading these hilarious fantasy novels that are, you know, stories about dwarves and golems and ghosts and stuff. But they're super funny. Like, that's their whole thing. They're very jokey. So if you like fantasy,
you like you, hilarious stories about dwarves, you might make out afterwards.
So what? We stayed up really late one night, sort of read, like we would take turns reading like a couple pages and going back and forth, like in bed.
Oh, out loud.
Out loud, right.
Okay.
In bed. And then.
Bed. Got it.
Tops and came off.
Massaging.
Massaging.
Topless.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Can you just zoom in really close on that moment? So you're like, and then Frodo the dwarf said, "Arca parka park," and then you took off your tops.
It was more like, you know.
Eric, can you write a fantasy novel, please? I will read it.
It was more like, you know, laying side by side at first, and then like one arm over the other one, and then maybe a little bit more intimate cuddling. So it was just like a slow, like 3 hour progression.
While reading aloud to each other.
A fantasy novel.
And then you're like, my shoulders are sore.
Oh, let me just loosen my cardigan.
Yeah. So
my headgear.
So that happened, but she was but then the next night, like, I thought it was gonna happen again, and she was still kind of seeing this dude, and she started crying in bed about it, which I didn't know then, but was going to become another theme of my life as I sort of made the transition to dork friend guy to a guy who actually did hook up with
women.
Were
you in like a mental hospital when this happened? Who are these people?
Yeah.
Like, I have a lot of male friends, but I've never gone over to their house, taken my shirt off, got in their bed, and started crying.
That happens every week on American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Every week.
Oh. Yeah.
Sarah Paulson just weeping.
So we continued to be good friends, and we were super tight, but I continued to have this like thing for her. And I actually, at a certain point in my senior year, I believed that whenever her, like whatever the guy she was dating at that point, when that ended, which I knew it was going to end, that I was just kind of next in line to date her. Like, I just was like, you know, obviously we're going to start dating. And I said that to her at one point, and she flipped out about it. Like, you know, how could you ever think that anyone would be in line to date anybody? And legitimately, I mean, like, whatever. I had no fucking clue what was going on, right? Yeah. And so this one night, I wish I remembered what it was about. But, like, we were close enough that, you know, I would, like, go over to her house all the time, or she would just call me nights and just be like, what's going on? I want to see how you're doing, like, that kind of thing. So we were, like, legitimately close. It's just there was a lot of drama because I was insanely in love with her. And so
she was insane.
But I don't really put any blame on her. I honestly, even looking back on it, I just should have known what the fuck I was doing. So we had this. I remember we met up one day to go into like Ithaca proper and have some talk about something that was like a big deal to me, and it was really difficult. And she got really mad at me, and we didn't speak for a little while. So that happened. That talk happened on a Friday night after my drinking had begun. And it happened pretty early on a Friday night, like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 o'clock. And I knew that there was, and I felt really badly after it because it hadn't gone at all the way I wanted. I think I knew it wouldn't go well, but I just had to say what I thought, you know. So I knew that there was a party that night that I wasn't like fully properly invited to. I wasn't not invited to it. It's just like, I don't know. You know how parties are sometimes. But I knew that there was this, I was involved in the activist scene, and I knew that there was this talk going on that night at like one of the co-ops. And I was pretty sure that a bunch of the people who were going to the party were going to be at that talk beforehand. So I was like, if I go to the talk, they're all going to be like, hey, we're going to this party. Why don't you come with us? And that's what I wanted to do because I wanted to get Gertrude off of my mind. And I also thought that one of the hostesses of this party was extraordinarily hot. She also wasn't an activist, though she lived with some of the activists. It meant she wasn't annoying. And nothing takes your mind off of becoming an embarrassing ass by pursuing a woman, like making an embarrassing ass of yourself pursuing another woman. So that's what I was going to do. So all the campus lefties knew each other, but this party was going to be kind of the labor lefties, like the, you know, the like class warrior kids. And those kids are also the hardest drinkers. You know, they're the ones who've been drinking since they were 10 years old.
Because they're low class.
Just because they're edgy, not low class. Just
blue collar plays hard, Eric. You wouldn't know because you were riding horses.
Exactly.
I have no idea what the plebeians do.
Eric actually just looked down his nose at me. I saw him do
it's
it.
Just because I'm tall.
Yeah.
And better than me.
Yeah.
Not everything.
So I
get it, Eric.
I think Jamie captured it. Yeah, blue collar plays hard, and I knew that. So I go there with this kid, George, who I really looked up to. I thought he was a super cool guy. And this girl, Nadia, who I also had kind of a crush on, but she was sort of unreachable. And I was hanging out mostly with George at this party. And George, I was letting him make me the gin and tonics, and I always describe them later as gin and gin and gin and tonics. So I don't know. I had only been drinking for like 6 months at this point. So, and then George and I started talking with the hot hostess who I was, you know, trying to impress. And she was also a really hard drinker. And so I was trying to match her drink for drink because I didn't want to seem like, you know, wussy or anything. Yeah. So I was getting pretty drunk. A thing that is going to become relevant in a couple of minutes in the story is something I need to tell you guys, which you're not going to believe if you like go look at pictures of me on the website, but is true, is that I am and always have been a pretty acrobatic dude.
I'm, again, super shocked.
Yeah.
By everything you've said today.
I can do a killer cartwheel or round off. I have really great balance. I used to do things like, I would say, like, see that railing over there? And people would be like, yeah. I was like, do you think I could just jump up on that, like, from a dead stop and, like, walk across it? And they'd be like, I don't know. And I would do it. Like, you know.
I like that. I don't know. Like, people
so
are
you
like,
could be
care.
Both an aerialist and a parkour player if you
I would have if,
to
if parkour had been around when I was younger, I would have been pretty solid.
I mean, hasn't parkour always lived in our hearts?
Shouldn't you have been better at ultimate then? You would think.
Yeah, if you're so acrobatic, why don't you have those ultimate skills?
It's really more about ultimate's about really small hand-eye coordination and also like also really good cardiovascular, like being able to just run forever. Like, you know, and I wasn't good at that. So
fascinating.
So you're a jumper, not a runner.
Yeah, and I'm
flipper.
I'm good at flipping around. I never got to the point of being able to do like full handsprings and stuff that I'm sure I could have done it. I quit doing. But
can you stick it at the end?
Yeah, like a good solid round off. Yeah, I can nail it.
Do you bring it? Bring it on.
I bring it. I used to one time, just as an illustration, I was leaving theater practice and I was drinking a Sprite. And I said to myself, I said to everybody, I was like, do you think I could like do a cartwheel with the Sprite in my hand and not spill any? And they were like, I don't know. And I was like, let's find out. And I did it. Didn't spill any. It was awesome.
That's amazing.
I also like that every time you tell a story, it's like, oh, do you think I can do this? And everyone's like, I don't know. Like, they're like, whatever you need to do to go to bed at night, Brady, do your Sprite cartwheel. We have class later.
Exactly.
I have a whole new perspective on your life as you tell it in stories now that I know that you are a gymnast.
Yeah, it's fair to say fairly acrobatic. I also
now, did you train over a double slide doing flips?
No, I didn't. I didn't really even train. I probably still can. I could do a backbend and come back up without any, you know, just bam.
You're an outsider acrobat.
An outsider acrobat. Yeah, exactly. So this party, if you guys don't know about Ithaca is a very hilly town. So Cornell is up at the top of this high hill. And most of the students...
So you can look down on the blue-collar people.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you can look down on the blue-collar people. And it's up on this high hill, and most of the students live in houses that are also on the hill. And so these girls who were having the party that night lived on Buffalo Street, which is the legendary steep hill of Ithaca. It's like crazy steep. And most of the... It's so steep that most of the houses on Buffalo Street had a hill at the end of their lawn. Like, you know, their lawn would go out a little ways, and then it would curve down to the street, and it would still be grass, but it was like a little hill. And then at the bottom of that hill would be the sidewalk. So that's how hilly it was. So it was winter. There was patches of snow on the ground. It was probably like February or something. I'm not really sure. I actually know the exact dates for a reason that we'll get to in a second. But the hot girl was inside, hosting people inside, and I had made it out to the porch. And I remember the only non-liquor I drank that night is I had a bottle of Labatt's beer in my hand. There was only ever Labatt's beer at Labor Kids parties because it was the only inexpensive union-made brew that you could get. And they only... So anyone wants to know, Labatt's union-made. So I was drinking a Labatt's. I was standing with George and Nadia. And a couple of the, like, fun labor dudes had gotten up on the railing of the porch and were, like, standing on the railing holding on to, like, one of the little pillars. And they were just kind of, like, yelling at people going by. And they weren't saying anything mean. They were just like, oh, what's up, you guys? We're having fun. You know, like, whatever. And so they're up doing that. And so the hot hostess girl comes outside and she knows these guys. And she's like, you fucking idiots, get off the railing. I don't want to take anyone to the hospital tonight. So what the fuck are you doing? And so I'm really drunk at this point. And so I think to myself, I could get on that railing and yell all I wanted, and I would never fall off because I'm super acrobatic. And in fact, wouldn't she be impressed if I not only like was able to get on the railing, if I was able to jump off this porch and do somersaults across the lawn?
Nothing makes a girl more attracted than doing gymnastics.
I mean,
yeah, no, that's how I met my first husband.
Even if this hadn't gone horribly, horribly, horribly wrong as it did, it was still a terrible idea. Like, even if it had gone perfectly and I had done those somersaults and been like, ta-da! Everybody was like, what the fuck are you doing? But I was really drunk and I didn't think about it. I just had the idea and I went with it. So, as you might imagine, this story got retold a lot over the next few months. And when George would tell the story, the dude who I went over to the party with, he would always say that I dove headfirst off the porch. Now, I don't think I dove headfirst off the porch. Like, that's a little more dramatic than I think even I would have been willing to do. But, like, I was drunk enough to do somersaults across the lawn at 2 in the morning. So I don't know that my version of events is as clear. All I know is I jumped off the porch and I remember... I can still remember to this day seeing the sky pass by in front of me multiple times and not like already forgetting like what I had decided to do. So not really being clear as to like why the sky was passing by in front of me. And this is actually a testament to like how solid I was at like doing somersaults, because I was not thinking. I just like I had gone into like muscle memory at this point and was just doing somersaults. So like I said, at the end of this lawn, there was a hill that led down to a sidewalk. And because I didn't really know what I was doing and the lawn wasn't that big, I got to the edge of that hill. And people say, who watched it all happen, that I kind of slowed down at the crest and they thought I was going to stop. But I didn't stop because I had no idea what was going on. And I just rolled down the hill and smashed my head into the concrete. And that pulled me out of it. And I immediately jumped up and I was like, I'm fine, everybody. I'm fine. I'm fine. Okay. And my friend Nadia, who had like leapt into action immediately, ran down the hill and saw me. And in her like, Nadia was so deadpan about everything. She was just like, well, you're bleeding. and I was like, oh. And my first thought was, because I was already a nascent metro at this point, I was like, but I really like this sweater. And I pulled my sweater off really quickly because I didn't want blood to get on it.
Makes sense.
And so I go back into the party and I put some direct pressure on the bleeding in the back of my head. And this guy, Land, was there. And I didn't really know Land.
Is that his real name that's not an Ultimate Frisbee name?
No,
his
Land.
His real name was Land.
His real name was Land.
Olakes.
Land.
He was the heir to the Butter fortune. His mother was a caricature of a Native American.
I mean, he was a good looking guy, so could have been true. So Land had apparently worked for the Ithaca Fire Department for a semester or two, which is something that actually students could do. And so he had first responder training. And he kind of checked me out and he was like, well, you don't seem to have like, I don't know, you show no signs of neurological damage. Like he did some things. Remember, he squeezed my fingers or something. It made me do some, I don't know what it was. I was really drunk. But he checked me out. He was like, I think you're all right. You know, if you want to just go home, you can just go home. So I put some direct pressure on it. George walked me back to my house and that became a part of activist history. But I was always pretty big hypochondriac. And since I was bleeding from the back of my head, I was like, I don't know, I was kind of scared. So I put a bandage around it and I decided arbitrarily, like, I'm going to stay up for 2 hours. And if I don't feel horrible, then I can go to sleep and everything's okay. So so I got out these cereal boxes and I tore them open because I don't know, I didn't want to go up to my room or something. And I got out a pen and I just like wrote on inside these cereal boxes as a thing to keep me active for 2 hours. And like the things I were writing was mostly like, Gertrude will never love me because I'm dumb
and have no paper.
But now I don't have to say I'm self-righteous about alcohol anymore because I've done something legitimately stupid.
This is like a surefire sign that you do have a brain injury and should go to the hospital.
You're writing a manifesto on the back of a cereal box.
You're like, look at these.
You were in college. There had to be paper around.
Or a computer.
I couldn't be bothered. Well, I've always liked writing by hand. So like, I was going to write by hand. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't want to go upstairs because it was late at night. I didn't want to bother my roommates. And so I couldn't find. Yeah, I was just like, these cereal boxes will
no
do.
No paper towels.
Yeah, well, I was just like, I, you know, I also was like, I think I also understood this writing that I'm doing is not important writing. Like, this is not like we're not about to lose Moby Dick here. So
it's a shame you didn't save those for Hillary's Museum of Ridiculous Teenage Behavior.
Yeah, that would be great.
It was good stuff. So I stayed up for about, I just stayed up for 2 hours. I didn't feel too weird, but then I went to bed. But then I like woke up later in the night and I checked out my head and it was like still bleeding a little bit. And so I was like, huh, okay, I guess I should go to the emergency room. So Tigger was actually one of my roommates at the time. And so I got Tigger up, got him out of bed with his then girlfriend, now wife. Ah, how college bringing people together.
Bounce there.
Yeah, bounce there. All I can imagine is Tigger bouncing Piglet all the way to the emergency room.
Tigger definitely was not bouncing. He was like, what the fuck do you want? there's no bouncing Tigger. But he took me. And it was pretty funny because I get into the emergency room and it took a while, you know, it took a while for them to get to me. And then the doctor comes in and I was like, oh, he looked really familiar. And I talked to him for a second. Then he left and he came back in and I was like, you look really familiar. And he said, yeah, don't you work for my wife? And it turned out that he was my boss at my work study on campus, which is this little nonprofit that was based at the college. It was his wife that was my boss, and he'd been in the office before, and I remembered him. He was like, well, you know, Dr. Patient Confidentiality, I won't tell her. I was like, I'll probably tell her. You tell her. So when I saw her on Monday, she was like, I hear you had a wild weekend. And I was like, yeah, oh, God. So there was a bright side to all of this. One of the things I was getting really interested in was U.S. policy towards Iraq. We had basically,
as we all were,
yeah, mm-hmm. We had basically continued to be at war with Iraq ever since the original Desert Storm War, you know, the continued embargo, continued bombings. And so I was pretty exercised about this topic. And as folks may remember from the last episode that I led on, I was a columnist for my school paper. So I wrote this like pretty funny column, I think, where I told the story of how I went too far, drank too much and jumped off a porch and hurt myself. And I did it as a metaphor for U.S. policy in Iraq.
Oh, my God. I love college journalism and I love everything that you've ever written in college.
So at least, you know, I had an emergency room bill. I had staples in the back of my head. But at least I was able to make a point about America's place in the world.
And that's why everyone should drink to excess. To create good metaphors for global policy.
Yeah, no, because metaphors, you really can't get them until you physically injure yourself. I don't know how many times I've had to hurl myself off of stairs, you know, into holes, trip myself, just to get, you know, a proper sentence down. It's horrifying.
It's like,
you should see my shins. They're disgusting.
And was your sweater okay?
It was. Yeah. I had it for a long time after that.
Okay, so good. It was like a cardigan, not over the head?
No, it was over the head, but I got it off quickly enough. Actually, looking back on it, the truth is, it was too big, but I didn't really, I had a poor self-esteem.
It was the 90s?
I had poor self-esteem, so I bought everything way too baggy at that point.
So it was easy to get off.
It was easy to get off, yeah. Good.
I was concerned about that.
Me too.
Yeah. And maybe this is a little bit kind of elegant, but I did, a couple years after that, actually did manage to get my first girlfriend. And when we split up, she said she wanted something of mine to take with her. And because that sweater was just way too fucking big for me, and I got it at that point, I gave her that sweater. So it became an artifact of actually overcoming this ongoing girl-related problem I have.
I want something of yours.
Here's this sweater I don't even like anymore.
Not like the letters that we wrote to each other to express our affection towards each other. Just the sweater.
Just the sweater.
That was more than she deserved.
Did you break up with her or she broke up with you?
It's so complicated.
Of course it is. Of course. I don't know why I even asked that question.
So complicated.
It's like asking Jamie, how was your day?
Yeah. There was a lot of breakups. A lot of breakups. Future episodes.
Episodes like 21, 27, 32, 38, 41, 46, and 59. Something to look forward to.
It's true. So do folks around the table have moments in which they injured themselves or just did something ridiculous that was dangerous and clumsy and painful?
Oh boy, have we. Actually, I didn't drink a lot before I was 21, and I like gradually took in how to be an adult who drinks. So I didn't have any of that like college binge drinking, but I also hung out with people that like could drink a lot of whiskey and thought I could drink a similar amount of whiskey. And the New Year's Eve I was 21, I matched a large man without thinking about it. And then I climbed a ladder up onto a roof. And it was raining, and I was wearing a pair of shoes with no traction on the bottom. And when it was time to get off of the roof, I was drunkenly climbing down a metal ladder in the rain. And so, of course, I slipped. That is what you do. I slipped, and I fell about 8 feet onto the secondary roof. It was a South Philly house, so it was confusingly built and made no sense and old. And one of my friends said, I heard something next to my ear, and then I saw you on the ground because I just slipped and I fell. And in my mind, I was like, you got to play this cool. Don't let anyone know you did this accidentally. Like, because most people fall off ladders on purpose. I know all of you have. Frequently. So when I landed in kind of a split formation, I put my hands up over my head and just went, ta-da! And then I thought, that's not a good feeling in my ankle. And so I had to like sort of like wrestle myself up, and I tried to fake that I hadn't hurt my ankle. I probably sprained it, but I didn't go to a doctor for it, and I can walk now. So it's fine, I think. Medical advice from Jamie.
I like that you went pound for pound with a large guy, and that's what led you into trouble, and I went pound for pound with a 19-year-old girl, and that's what got me into trouble.
Well,
my story.
Yeah, so that covers it.
I, too, went pound to pound with a very large man about 12 days ago at the first annual Veggie Wing Bowl Comedy Spectacular, where I ate more veggie seitan wings than any human should possibly eat in the entire world.
And it was amazing.
And luckily I did not end up in the emergency room.
You know, I'm like overloaded by like memories from college because, you know, as we all know, especially if you saw Risk, I like to drink a lot in the past, and that often led to bad scenarios, crawling home on my hands and knees through the Upper West Side of New York, singing Britney Spears. That resulted in a ruined pair of jeans and some bloody knees. But I think the weirdest, like from that period, like the thing that pops in my mind like first, it wasn't even related to drinking. It was just sort of, it was related to musical theater, my other passion. Which I was cast as the villain in Once on This Island, which is a Caribbean retelling of The Little Mermaid. And for whatever reason, I think I had to wear like a tank top in the production. And so I was really concerned about my body image. And so I was starving myself because I didn't want to like appear fat. I had a lot of problems in college. And so I wasn't eating and I was like lightheaded. And so we were up for tech rehearsal. And the stage manager said very clearly, like we had different platforms, 8-foot platforms that each of the gods, there was 4 different gods. I was a god of something, storm or whatever. Who cares?
Tank tops,
yeah. So she was like, don't climb on your platform because the back stairs aren't attached. And I didn't, for whatever reason, my anorexic brain didn't understand that. So I'm like doing my big solo and I climb up on my platform and I step down the back and the whole staircase collapses beneath me. And I fall 8 feet onto my back. And I was so desperate not to lose the part that I did like you did, Brady. I jumped up. I was like, I'm fine. And like, I think I had like significant like muscular damage. I was like,
scoliosis.
Yeah, I experienced scoliosis of every part of my body. So that, yeah, that was not related to drinking so much as just bad life choices in general.
And did you hit the high note?
Oh, no. I did not hit the high note or any of the notes, actually. But I think I got good reviews from my mom, who came from Baltimore to see it.
That's good.
Nice. Thanks a lot, everybody. And if folks out there have stories of crazy things they've done for love or alcohol, we would love to hear them. And also, if you've been enjoying our podcast and listening for a while, it would really, really, really help if you would go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and a comment. And if your comment is awesome and has that 5-star rating, we will probably read it on the show. Thank you to all the folks who've done that for us already. And meanwhile, here is another awesome thing that will make you want to tune in to The World Exists next week.
A Ah, you don't like to see the balls by the face. What the batter has to understand is sometimes you have to just jerk off the ball and let the guy jam you, you know? And if, and if it comes, it comes. Like, it was like he wouldn't stop. It was like he just kept going on and on and on.